thinking of helping the captain because you think she's like you. Well, I don't bloody well care any more, Miss Clever. I've done my best, and I'm going to go on doing it. And they'll all come back into game space, and it'll be just like the Space Invaders all over again. And I'll be there, every night. Her mouth was open. There was a knock on the door, and almost immediately, mothers being what they are, Kirsty's mother pushed it open. She brought in a wide grin and a tray. "I'm sure you'd both like some tea," she said. "And yes, mother," said Kirsty, and rolled her eyes. "There's some macaroons. Have you found out your friend's name now?"
"John Maxwell," said Johnny.
"And what do your friends call you?" said Kirsty's mother sweetly.
"Sometimes they call me Rubber," said Johnny.
"Do they? Whatever for?"
"Mother, we were talking," said Kirsty.
"Cobbers is on in a minute," said Kirsty's mother. I shall watch it on the set in the kitchen, shall I?"
"Goodbye," said Kirsty meaningfully.
Yes," said her mother, and went out.
"She dithers a lot," said Kirsty. "Fancy getting married when you're 20. A complete lack of ambition."
She stared at Johnny for a while. He was keeping quiet. He'd been amazed to hear his own thoughts. Kirsty coughed. She looked a little uncertain for the first time since Johnny had met her.
"Well," she said, okay, and we won't be able to fight all the players when they get back to game space."
"No, there's not enough missiles."
"Could we dream a few more?"
"No, I thought of that. You get the ship you play with. I mean, we know it's only got 6 missiles. I've tried dreaming more, and it doesn't work."
"Hmm, interesting problem.
Sorry," she added quickly when she saw his expression. Johnny stared at the movie posters. Sigourney. Games everywhere. Big Mac was a tough guy in his head, and this one kept sharp pencils and had to win everything, and in her head, shot aliens. Everyone had these pictures of themselves in their head, except him. He blinked. And now his head ached. There was a buzzing in his ears. Kirsty's face drifted towards him.
"Are you all right?"
The headache was really bad now.
"You're ill, and you look all thin. When did you last eat?"
"I don't know. Had something last night, I think."
"Last night? What about breakfast and lunch?"
"Oh, well, you know, I kept thinking about..."
"You'd better drink that tea and eat that macaroon. Phew! When did you last have a bath?"
"It's kind of..."
"Good grief! Listen, listen."
It was important to tell her. He didn't feel well at all.
"Yes?" "We dream our way in," he said. "What are you talking about? You're swaying." "We go onto their ship." "But we agreed we don't know what it looks like inside." "Okay, good. So we decide what it does look like inside, right?"
She tapped her pad irritably.
"So what does it look like?" "I don't know. The inside of a spaceship. Corridors and cabins and stuff like that. Nuts and bolts and panels and sliding doors. Scotsman saying, 'The engines cannot take it anymore.' Bright blue lights." "Hmm, that's what you think is inside spaceships, is it?"
Kirsty glared at him. She generally glared. It was her normal expression.
"When we go to sleep, I mean, when I go to sleep, I'll try and wake up inside the ship," he said. "How?" "I don't know. By concentrating, I suppose."
She leaned forward. For the first time since he'd met her, she looked concerned.
"You don't look capable of thinking straight," she said.
"I'll be all right." Johnny stood up. Chapter 10. In space, no one is listening anyway. And woke up. He was lying down on something hard. There was some sort of mesh just in front of his eyes. He stared at it for a while. There was also a faint vibration in the floor and a distant background rumbling. He was obviously back in game space, but he certainly wasn't in a starship. The mesh moved. The captain's face appeared over the edge of the mesh, upside down.
"Johnny?"
"Where am I?"
"You appear to be under my bed."
He rolled sideways.
"I'm on your ship." "Oh, yes."
"Right! Ha! I knew I could do it!"
He stood up and looked around the cabin. It wasn't very interesting. Apart from the bed, which was under something that looked like a sunray lamp, there was only a desk and something that was probably a chair, if you had four back legs and a thick tail. On the desk were half a dozen plastic aliens. There was also a cage with a couple of long-beaked birds in it. They sat side by side on their perch and watched Johnny with almost intelligent eyes. Right. Sigourney was right. He did think better in game space. All the decisions seemed so much clearer. Okay, so he was on board. He'd rather hoped to be outside the cabin the captain was locked in, but this was a start. He stared at the wall. There was a grill. What's that? He said, pointing.
It is where the air comes in.
Johnny pulled at the grill. There was no very obvious way of removing it. If it could be removed, the hole behind it was easily big enough for the captain. Air ducts. Well, what did he expect? We've got to get this off, he said, before something dreadful happens.
We are imprisoned, said the captain. What more can happen that is dreadful?
Have you ever heard the name Sigourney? Said Johnny cautiously.
No, but it sounds a lovely name, said the captain. Who is this Sigourney?
Well, if she can dream her way here as well, then there's going to be trouble. You should see the picture she's got on her walls.
What of?
Aliens, said Johnny.
She takes a very close interest in alien races,
said the captain happily. Yes. The mere thought of her arrival made him pull urgently at the grill. There's something on the inside, and I can't quite get my hand through. The captain watched him with interest. Something like wing nuts, grunted Johnny.
This is very instructive, said the captain, peering over his shoulder.
I can't get a grip.
You wish to turn them?
Yes. The captain waddled over to the table and opened the bird cage. Both of the birds hopped out onto her hand. The captain said a few words in scree-wee. The birds fluttered past Johnny's head, squeezed through the mesh, and disappeared. After a second or two, he heard the squeak-squeak of nuts being undone.
What were they?
He said.
Gee, said the captain. Mouth birds. You understand?
She opened her mouth, revealing several rows of yellow teeth.
For hygiene.
Living toothbrushes.
We have always had them. They are traditional. Very intelligent. Bred for it, you know. Clever things. They understand several words of scree-wee.
The squeaking went on. There was a clonk and a nut rolled through the mesh. The panel fell into the room. Johnny looked at the hole. Okay, he said uncertainly. You don't know where it goes, do you?
No. There are ventilation shafts all over the ship. Will you lead the way? I would be happy for you to lead the way, said the captain.
Johnny stood on the bed and crawled into the hole. It went a little way and then opened onto a bigger shaft. All over the ship, he said.
Yes.
Johnny paused for a moment. He'd never liked narrow, dark spaces. Oh, right, he said. Kirsty's mother put down the phone.
There's no one answering, she said.
I think he said his father works late, and his mother sometimes works in the evening, said Kirsty. Anyway, the doctor said he's basically all right, didn't she? He's just run down, she said.
What was the stuff she gave him?
She said it'd make him sleep. He's not getting enough sleep. 12-year-old boys need a lot of sleep.
I know this one does, said Kirsty.
And you said he's not eating properly. Where did you meet him, anyway?
Kirsty began, and then smiled to herself. Out and about.
Kirsty's mother looked worried.
Are you sure he's all there?
He's all there, said Kirsty, climbing the stairs. I'm not sure that he's all here, but he's certainly all there.
She opened the door of the spare room and looked in. Johnny was fast asleep in a pair of her brother's pyjamas. He looked very young. It's amazing how young 12 is when you're 13. Then she went to her own bedroom, got ready for bed, and slid between the sheets. It was pretty early. It had been a busy evening. He was a loser. You could tell. He dressed like a loser. A a ditherer. Someone who said a lot and went through life trying not to be noticed. She'd never done that. She'd always gone through life as if there was a big red arrow above the planet indicating precisely where she was. On the other hand, he tried so hard. She bet he'd cried when E.T. died. She pushed herself up on one elbow and stared at the movie posters. Trying wasn't the point. You had to win. What good was anything if you didn't win?
Stuck? You're an alien, said Johnny. Aliens don't get stuck in air ducts. It's practically a well-known fact.
He backed into a side tunnel and turned around.
I am sorry. It occurs to me that possibly I am the wrong type of alien, said the captain. I can go backwards, but I am forwardly disadvantaged.
Okay, back up to that second junction we passed, said Johnny. We're lost anyway.
No,
said the captain.
I know where we are. It says here, this is junction...
Do you know where that is?
No.
I saw a film where there was an alien crawling around inside a spaceship's air ducts, and it could come out wherever it liked, said Johnny reproachfully.
Doubtless it had a map, said the captain.
Johnny crawled around a corner and found another grill. There didn't seem to be any activity on the other side of it. He unscrewed the nuts and let it fall onto the floor. There was a corridor. He dropped into it, then turned and helped the captain through. Scree-wee might have descended from crocodiles, but crocodiles preferred sandbanks. They weren't very good at crawling through narrow spaces. Her skin felt cold and dry, like silk. There were no other Scree-wee around.
They're probably at battle stations, said Johnny.
We are always at battle stations,
said the captain bitterly, brushing dust off her scales.
This is corridor. Now we must get to the bridge, yes?
Won't they just lock you up again? Said Johnny.
I think not. Disobedience to properly constituted authority does not come easily to us. The gunnery officer is very persuasive. But once they see that I am free again, they will give in. At least, the captain added, most of them will. The gunnery officer may prove difficult. He dreams of grandeur.
She waddled a little way along the bare corridor, keeping close to the wall. Johnny trailed behind her.
Dreams are always tricky, he said.
Yes.
But they'll wake up when the players start shooting again, won't they? They'll soon see what he's leading them into.
We have a proverb, said the captain. Ski-gee-shee-dwee-gee. It means,
she thought for a moment,
when you are riding a G, a six-legged domesticated beast of burden capable of simple instruction but also traditionally foul-tempered, it is easier to stay on rather than dismount. Equally, better to trust yourself to a G than risk attack from the sure-footed G, which will easily outrun a scree-wee on foot. Of course, it is a little snappier in our language.
They'd reached a corner. The captain peered around it and then jerked her head back.
There is a guard outside the door of my cabin, she said. She is armed.
Can you talk to her?
She is under orders. I fear that I will only be allowed to say, ah,
said the captain.
But feel free to make the attempt. I have no other options.
Oh, well, you only die a few hundred times, thought Johnny.
He stepped out into the corridor. The guard turned to look at him and half raised a melted-looking thing that nevertheless very clearly said gun. But she looked at him in puzzlement. She's never seen a human before, he thought. He spread his arms wide in what he hoped was an innocent-looking way and smiled. Which just goes to show that you shouldn't take things for granted. Because, as the captain told him later, when a scree-wee is about to fight, she does two things. She spreads her front pairs of arms wide to grip and throttle, and exposes her teeth, ready to bite. The guard raised the gun. Then there was a thunderous knocking on the other side of the cabin door. The guard made a simple mistake. She should have ignored the knocking, loud and desperate though it was, and concentrated on Johnny. But she tried to keep the gun pointing in his general direction while she pressed a panel by the door. After all, it was only the captain in there, wasn't it? and the captain was still the captain, even if she was locked up. She could keep an eye on both of them. The door opened a little way. A foot came out, swinging upwards, and caught the guard under the snout. There was a click as all its teeth met. Its eyes crossed. Someone shouted, "Hey!" The guard swayed backwards. Kirsty came through the door airborne and started hacking at the guard's arms with her hands. It dropped the gun. She picked it up in one movement. The guard opened its mouth to bite, spread its arms to grip and throttle, and then went cross-eyed because the gun barrel was suddenly thrust between its teeth.
"Don't swallow," said Kirsty very deliberately.
There was a sudden, very heavy silence. The guard stayed very still.
"This is a friend of mine," said Johnny. "Oh, yes," said the captain. "Sigourney, one of your warriors. Is she a friend of mine?"
"At the moment," said Sigourney, without moving her head. She had tied one of the strips of webbing from the captain's bed around her forehead. She was breathing heavily. There was a wild glint in her eye. Johnny suddenly felt very sorry for the guard.
"You know, I'm glad she's a friend of mine," said the captain.
"E-e-og-e?"
said the guard. Its arms were trembling. The Screewee didn't sweat, but this one would probably have liked to.
"We'd better tie her up and put her in the cabin," said Johnny.
"Eat!"
said the guard.
"I could just fire," said Sigourney wistfully.
"No!" said Johnny and the captain together.
"Eep!"
said the guard.
"Oh, all right,"
Sigourney relaxed. The guard sagged.
"Sorry to be late," said Sigourney. "Had a bit of trouble getting to sleep."
The captain said something to the guard in Screewee. It nodded in a strangely human way and trooped obediently into the cabin, where it squatted down just as obediently and let them tie its hands and feet with more bits of bed.
"You've got a black belt in karate, too, I expect," said Johnny.
"Only purple," she said. "But I haven't been doing it long," she added quickly. "Huh! Is that the only kind of knot you can tie?"
"I went to karate once with Big Mac," said Johnny, trying to ignore that.
"What happened?"
"I got my foot caught in my trousers."
"And you are the chosen one? Huh! They could have chosen me."
"They tried, but I was the one who listened," said Johnny quietly.
Sigourney picked up the gun and cradled it in her arms.
"Well, I'm here now," she said, "and ready to kick some butt."
"Some butt what?" said Johnny wearily.
He really hated the phrase. It was a game saying. It tried to fool you into believing that real bullets weren't going to go through real people. Sigourney sniffed.
"Nerd!"
They went back into the corridor.
"By the way," said Johnny, "what happened to me?" "You just collapsed, right there on the floor. We've got a doctor living next door. Mum went and got her. Unusually bright of her, really. She said you were just tired out and looked as though you hadn't been eating properly."
"This is true," said the captain. "Did I not say? Too much sugar and carbohydrate, not enough fresh vitamins. You should get out more."
"Yeah, right," said Johnny.
There was something different about the corridor. Before, it had been grey metal, only interesting if you really liked looking at nuts and bolts. But now it was darker, with more curves. The walls glistened and dripped menace. Dripped something, anyway. The captain looked different, too. She hadn't changed exactly. It was just that her teeth and claws were somehow more obvious. A few minutes ago, she'd been an intelligent person who just happened to be an eight-legged crocodile. Now she was an eight-legged crocodile who just happened to be intelligent. Game space was changing. Now two people were sharing one dream.
"Hold on, there's..." he began. "Don't let's hang around," said Sigourney. "But you're..."
Johnny began.
"Dreaming it wrong,"
he finished to himself.
"This really is nuts,"
he told himself as he trailed after them. At home, Kirsty went around being Miss Brains. In here it was all,
"Make my shorts, eat my day."
The captain waddled at high speed along the corridors. Now steam was dribbling from somewhere, making the floor misty and wet. There wasn't that much in the Screewee ships. Perhaps they ought to have sat down and worked out the inside of one in a bit more detail before they dreamed, he thought. They could have added more cabins and big screens and interesting things like that.
As it was, all there seemed to be were these snaking corridors that were unpleasantly like caves. Bigger caves, though. They'd got wider. Mysterious passages led off in various directions. Sigourney crept along with her back against the wall, spinning around rapidly every time they passed another passage. She stiffened.
"There's another one coming," she hissed. "It's pushing something. Get back."
She elbowed them into the wall. Johnny could hear the scrape, scrape of claws on the floor and something rattling.
"When it gets closer, I'll get it. I'll leap out."
Johnny poked his head around the corner.
"Kirsty?"
She took no notice.
"Sigourney?"
he tried.
"Yes?" "I know you're going to leap out," said Johnny, "but don't pull the trigger, right?" "It's an alien." "So it's an alien. You don't have to shoot them all."
The rattling got closer. There was also a faint squeaking. Sigourney gripped the gun excitedly and leapt out.
"Okay, you..."
It was a very small Scree-Wee. Most of its scales were grey. Its crest was nearly worn away. Its tail just dragged behind it. When it opened its mouth, there were three teeth left, and they were huddling together at the back. It blinked owlishly at them over the top of the trolley it had been pushing. Apart from anything else, Kirsty had been aiming the gun well above its head. There was one of those awkward pauses.
"Around this time," said the captain behind them, "the crew on the bridge have a snack brought to them."
Johnny leaned forward, nodded at the little old alien, and lifted the lid of the tray that was on the trolley. There were a few bowls of something green and bubbling. He gently lowered the lid again.
"I think you were going to shoot the tea lady," he said. "How was I to know?" Kirsty demanded. "It could have been anything. This is an alien spaceship. You're not supposed to get tea ladies."
The captain said something in Scree-Wee to the old alien, who shuffled around slowly and went off back down the corridor. One wheel of the trolley kept squeaking. Kirsty was furious.
"This isn't going right," she hissed.
"Come on," said Johnny. "Let's go to the bridge and get it over with."
"I didn't know it was a tea lady. That's your dreaming."
"Yes, all right."
"She had no right to be there."
"I suppose even aliens get a bit thirsty in the afternoons."
"That's not what I meant. They're supposed to be alien. That means slavering and claws. It doesn't mean sending out for a coffee and a jam donut."
"Things are just like they are," said Johnny, shrugging. She turned on him.
"Why do you just accept everything? Why don't you ever try to change things?"
"They're generally bad enough already," he said. She leapt ahead and peered around the next corner.
"Guards," she said, "and these have got guns."
Johnny looked around the corner. There were two Scree-Wee standing in front of a round door. They were indeed armed.
"Satisfied?" she snapped. "No hint of Danish pastries anywhere, right? Now can I actually shoot something?" "No. I keep telling you, you have to give them a chance to surrender. You always make it difficult."
She raised the gun and stepped out. So did the captain. She hissed a word in Scree-Wee. The guards looked from her to Kirsty, who was squinting along her gun barrel. One of them hissed something.
"She says the gunnery officer has instructed them to shoot anyone who approaches the door," said the captain. "I'll fire if they move," said Kirsty. "I mean it."
The captain spoke in Scree-Wee again. The guards stared at Johnny. They lowered their guns. Suspicion rose inside him.
"What did you just tell them?" he said. "I just told them who you were," said the captain. "You said I was the chosen one."
One of the guards was trying to kneel. That looked very strange in a creature with four legs. Kirsty rolled her eyes.
"It's better than being shot at," said the captain. "I've been shot at a lot. I know what I'm talking about."
"Tell her to get up," said Johnny. "What do we do now? Who's on the bridge?"
"Most of the officers," said the captain. "The guard says there have been arguments, gunfire."
"That's more like it," said Kirsty. They looked at the door. "Okay," said Johnny. "Let's go." The captain motioned one of the guards aside and touched a plate by the door.
Chapter 11. Humans. Johnny saw it all in one long, long second. Firstly, the bridge was big. It seemed to be the size of a football pitch. And at one end there was a screen which looked almost as big. He felt like an ant standing in front of a TV set. The screen was covered with green dots. Players, heading for the fleet. There were hundreds of them. Right in front of the screen was a horseshoe-shaped bank of controls with a dozen seats ranged in front of it. It's here, he thought. When I was sitting in my room playing, they were in here, in this great shadowy room, steering their ship, firing back. Only one seat was occupied now. Its occupant was already standing up, half-turning, reaching for something.
Go ahead, said Kirsty. Make my star date.
The gunnery officer froze, glaring at them.
Too late, he said. You are too late.
He waved a claw towards the screen.
I've taken us back to where we belong. There is no time to turn us round again. You must fight now.
He focused on Johnny.
What's that? He said. The chosen one, said the captain, starting to walk forward.
The others followed her.
But we must fight, said the gunnery officer. For honour, the honour of the Scree-wee. That's what we are for.
Johnny's foot touched something. He looked down. Now that his eyes had become accustomed to the gloom, he could see that he'd almost tripped over a Scree-wee. It was dead. Nothing with a hole like that in it could have been alive. Kirsty was looking down too. Johnny could see other shapes on the floor in the shadows.
He's been killing people, he whispered.
Shoot them in space, shoot them on a screen, and there was just an explosion and 5 points on the score total. When they'd been shot from a few meters away, then there was simply a reminder that someone who had been alive was now very definitely not alive anymore, and would never be again. He looked up at the gunnery officer. Scree-wee were cold-blooded and a long way from being human, but this one had a look about it. About him, that suggested a mind running off into madness. There was a silvery sheen on his scales. Johnny found himself wondering if the Scree-wee changed colour like chameleons. The captain had always looked more golden when she was acting normally, and became almost yellow when she was worried. She was the colour of lemons now. She hissed something. The guards looked at her in surprise, but turned and filed obediently out of the bridge. Then she turned to the gunnery officer.
You killed all of them, she said softly.
They tried to stop me. It is a matter of honour.
Yes, yes, I can see that, said the captain in a level voice.
She was shifting position slightly now, moving away from the humans.
A Scree-wee dies fighting, or not at all, shouted the gunnery officer.
The captain's scales had faded to the colour of old paper.
Yes, I understand. I understand, she said. And the humans understand too, don't you?
The gunnery officer turned his head. The captain spread her arms, opened her mouth, and leapt. The male must have sensed her. He turned, claws whirring through the air. Johnny reached out and caught Kirsty's gun as she raised it.
No! You might hit her! Why'd she do that? I could easily have shot him. So could the guards. Why just jump at him like that?
The fighters were a whirling ball of claws and tails.
It's personal. I think she hates him too much, he said. But look at the screen.
There were more green dots. Red figures that might have meant something to a Scree-wee were scrolling up on one side too fast for a human to read. He looked down at the controls.
They're getting closer. We've got to do something.
Kirsty stared at the controls too. The seats were made to fit a Scree-wee. So were the controls themselves.
Well, do you know what all these symbols mean? She said. Fast? Slow? Fire? The cigarette lighter?
The fighters had broken apart and were circling each other, hissing. The green and red light from the screen threw unpleasant shadows. Neither Scree-wee was paying the humans the least attention. They couldn't afford to. Scree-wee walked like ducks and looked like a cartoon of a crocodile, but they fought like cats. It was mainly watching and snarling, with short, terrible blurs of attack and defence. A light started to flash on the panel, and an alarm rang. It rang in scree-wee, but it was still pretty urgent, even in human. The captain spun around. The gunnery officer jumped backwards, hit the ground running, and sped towards the door. He was through it in a blur.
"He can't go anywhere,"
said the captain, staggering across to the controls.
"I can deal with him later."
"You've got some nasty scratches," said Kirsty.
Scree-wee blood was blue.
"I know some first aid."
"A lot, I expect," said Johnny.
"But not for Scree-wee, I imagine," said the captain.
Her chest was heaving. One of her legs seemed to be at the wrong angle. Blue patches covered her tail.
"You could have just shot him," said Kirsty. "It was stupid to fight like that."
"Honor,"
snarled the captain. She tripped a switch with a claw and hissed some instructions in Scree-wee.
"But he was right. Sadly, I know this now. There is no changing Scree-wee nature. Our destiny is to fight and die. I have been foolish to think otherwise."
She blinked.
"Take off your shirt," Kirsty demanded.
"What?" said Johnny.
"Your shirt! Your shirt! Look at her! She's losing blood! She needs bandaging!"
Johnny obeyed reluctantly.
"You've got a vest on underneath! Only granddads wear a vest! Yuck! Don't you ever wash your clothes?"
He did sometimes, and occasionally his mother had a burst of being a mother, and everything in the house got washed. But usually he used the wash basket laundry, which consisted of going through the basket until he found something that didn't seem all that bad.
"But she said you wouldn't know anything about Scree-wee medicine," he said. "So what? Even if it's blue, blood's still blood. You should try to keep it inside."
Kirsty helped the captain to a chair. The alien was swaying a bit, and her scales had gone white, speckled with blue.
"Is there anything I can do?" said Johnny.
Kirsty glanced at him.
"I don't know," she said. "Is there anything you can do?"
She turned back to the captain. "We'll all die," Johnny thought. "They're all out there waiting, and here's me at the controls of the main alien ship. We can't turn round now, and I can't even read what it says on the controls. I've done it all wrong. It was all simple, and now it's all complicated. You think about doing things in dreams, but we're always wrong about dreams. When people talk about dreams, they mean daydreams. That's where you're Superman or whatever. That's where you win everything. In dreams, everything's weird. I'm in a dream now, or something like a dream, and when I wake up, all the Scree-wee will be back in game space, and they'll be shot at again, just like the Space Invaders. Hang on. Hang on." He stared at the meaningless controls again. On one of them, the symbols rearranged themselves to form main engines.
"This is my world, too. It's in my head."
He looked up at the big screen. "All of them. They're all there, waiting. In bedrooms and lounges around the world. In between watching cobbers and doing their homework. All waiting with their finger on the fire button, and each one thinking that they're the only one. All there, in front of me."
"I wasn't expecting to do this," said Kirsty behind him. "I wasn't expecting to be bandaging aliens. Put a claw on this knot, will you? What's your pulse level?"
"I don't think we have them," said the captain.
The ship thumped. The distant background rumble of the engines was suddenly a roar. The seats had bits sticking up where humans didn't expect bits to stick up. Johnny was sitting cross-legged on one, both hands on the controls, face multicoloured in the light of the screen. Kirsty tapped him on the shoulder.
"What are you doing?"
"Flying," said Johnny, without turning his head.
"He said it's too late to turn round."
"I'm not turning round."
"You don't know how to fly one of these."
"I'm not flying one of these. I'm flying the whole fleet."
"You can't understand the controls."
Green and red light made patterns on his face as he turned to her.
"You know, everyone tells me things, all the time," he said. "Well, I'm not listening now. I can read the controls. Why not?
They're in my head. Now sit down. I shall need you to do some things, and stop talking to me as if I'm stupid.
She sat down, almost hypnotized by his tone of voice.
But how?
There's a control that lets this ship steer all the others as well. It's used on long voyages. He moved a lever.
And I'm flying them as fast as I can. I don't think they can go any faster. All the dials have gone haywire, and I know that's scree-wee for red.
But you're heading straight for the players.
I've got to. There isn't time to turn round.
Wobbler had a pin-up over his bed. It was a close-up photograph of the Intel 805-86-75 microprocessor, taken through a microscope. It looked like a street map of a very complicated modern city. His grandfather complained that it was unhealthy, and why didn't he have a double-page spread from Giggles and Garters instead? But Wobbler had a vision. One day, if he could master GCSE maths and reliably pick up a soldering iron by the end that wasn't hot, he was going to be a big man in computers. A number one programmer, with his hair in a ponytail at the back like they all wore. Never mind about Yola saying it was all run by men in suits these days. One day, the world would hear from Wobbler Johnson. Probably via a phone line it didn't know was connected to its computer. In the meantime, he was staring at columns of numbers in an effort to make a completely illegal copy of Mr. Bunky Goes Boing. It had been given 4 stars and declared mega bad, which was what Splat magazine still thought meant pretty good if you were under 16. He blinked at the screen and smeared the grease on his glasses a bit more evenly. And that was enough for tonight. He sat back, and his eye caught sight of Only You Can Save Mankind under a pile of other discs. Poor old rubber. Of course you called people mental all the time, but there was something weird about him. His body walked around on Earth, but his brain was probably somewhere you couldn't find with an atlas. Wobbler shoved the disc in the drive. Odd about the game, though. There was probably a logical reason for it. That's what computers were. Logical. Start believing anything else and you were in trouble. The title came up, and then the bit that Gobi Software had pinched from Star Wars, and then his jaw dropped.
Ships. Hundreds of them. Getting bigger and bigger. Yellow ships filling the screen, so that it was just black and yellow, and just yellow, and then blinding white.
Wobbler ducked, and then a black screen. Almost black, anyway. For a moment, the words hung there.
Hi, Wobbler!
And then vanished.
More alarms were clanging and whooping. Kirsty peered out from between her fingers.
I don't think we hit anyone, said Johnny, tapping on the keys.
You flew straight through them.
That's right.
Okay, but they'll still come after us.
So now we turn round. It'll take a little while. How's the captain?
A clawed hand gripped the back of his chair, and her snout rested on his shoulder.
This is very bad, said the captain. Our engines are not designed to run at this sort of speed for any length of time. They could break down at any moment.
It's a calculated risk, said Johnny.
Really? How precisely did you calculate it?
Said the scree-wee. Well, not exactly calculate. I just thought it was worth a try, said Johnny.
You're turning back towards the players.
And we're still accelerating, said Johnny.
What were you typing just then?
Said Kirsty.
Oh, nothing, said Johnny, grinning. Just thought I saw someone I recognised, you know, as we flashed past.
Why are you looking so happy?
She demanded.
We're in terrible trouble.
Dunno. Because it's my trouble, I suppose. Captain, why have all those lights over there come on?
They're the ships of the fleet, said the captain. The commanders want to know what's happening.
Tell them to hold on to something, said Johnny. And tell them they're going home.
They both looked at him.
Oh, yes, very impressive, said Kirsty. Very dramatic. All very shut up.
What?
Shut up, said Johnny again, his eyes not leaving the screen. No one tells me to shut up. I'm telling you now. Just because you've got a mind like a a hammer doesn't mean you have to treat everyone else like a nail. Now, here they come again.
Wobbler took the disk out of the drive and looked at it. Then he felt around the back of his computer in case there were any extra wires. That Johnny, he was the quiet type. He always said that all he knew about computers was how to switch them on, but everyone knew about computers. He'd probably messed around with the game and given it back. Pretty good. Wobbler wondered how he'd done it. He put the disk back in and started the game again.
Only you can save mankind.
Yeah, yeah. Then the inside of the starship. Missiles, guns, score total. Yeah, yeah. And stars ahead. The sparkly ones you got in the game. He'd done much better ones for Voyage to Alpha Centauri. No ships to be seen. He picked up the joystick and moved it, watching the stars spin as the ship turned. There was a ship right behind him. Very much behind him. Dozens of ships again. Hundreds of ships. All getting bigger. Much bigger. Very quickly. Very, very quickly. Again. When he got up off the floor and put the leg back on the chair, the screen was all black again, except for the little flashing cursor. Wobbler stared at it.
Logic, he said.
Not believing in logical reasons was almost as bad as dropping hot solder onto a nylon sock. There had to be a logical explanation. One day he'd think of one.
They're following us! They're following us!
Little coils of smoke were coming up from the controls. There were all sorts of vibrations in the floor.
I'm pretty sure we can outrun them, said Johnny. How sure?
Said Kirsty.
Pretty sure.
Kirsty turned to the captain.
Have we got any rear guns?
The captain nodded.
They can be fired from here, she said. But we should not do that. We have surrendered, remember?
I haven't, said Kirsty. Which one fires the guns?
The stick with the button on the top.
This is just like a game's joystick, she said.
Of course it is, said Johnny. This is in our heads, remember? It has to be things we know.
The screen showed the view behind the fleet. There were green ships bunched up behind them.
They're coming right down our tailpipe, said Kirsty. This is going to be really easy.
Yes, it is, isn't it? Said Johnny. There was a dull edge to his voice. She hesitated.
What do you mean? She said.
Just dots in the middle of a circle, said Johnny. It's easy. Bang! Here comes the high score. Bang! Go ahead!
But it's game space. It's a game. Why are you acting like that? It's just something on a screen.
Fine. Just like the real thing. Press the button, then.
She gripped the stick. Then she paused again.
Why do you have to spoil everything?
Me, said Johnny vaguely. Look, if you're not going to fire, switch the screen back to what's ahead of us, will you? This dial here says we're moving much faster than we ought to be.
Well?
Well, I just think it would be nice not to run into an asteroid or something. Of course, if you want us to end up 5 miles across and 1 centimetre thick, keep looking back.
Oh, all right.
She took her finger off the screen switch, and then she gasped. They stared at the expanse of space ahead of them, and what was in the middle of it.
What,
said Kirsty after a long pause,
is that?
Johnny laughed. He tried to stop himself, because the ship was groaning and creaking like a tortured thing, but he couldn't. Tears ran down his cheeks. He thumped his hand helplessly on the control panel, accidentally switching a few lights on and off.
It's the border, said the captain.
Yes, said Johnny. Of course it is.
But it's...
Kirsty began.
Yes, said Johnny. The border, see? Beyond it, they're safe. Of course. No one crosses the border. Humans can't do it.
It can't be natural.
Who knows? This is game space, after all. It's probably natural here. I mean, we've all seen it before.
But it is still a very long way off, said the captain. I fear that...
There was a dull explosion somewhere behind them.
Missiles, said Kirsty. You should have let me...
No, listen, said Johnny.
Listen.
What to?
I can't hear anything.
That's because something's making a lot of silence,
said Johnny. The engines have stopped.
The engines have probably melted, said the captain.
We've still got, what is it, momentum or inertia or one of those things, said Johnny. We'll keep going until we hit something.
Or something hits us, said Kirsty.
She looked at the border again.
How big is that thing? She said.
It must be huge, said Johnny.
But there's stars beyond it.
Not our stars. I told you, that's one place humans can't go.
They looked at one another.
What happens then,
Kirsty began, like someone exploring a particularly nasty hole in a tooth,
if we're on a ship that tries to go past the border?
They both turned to the captain, who shrugged.
Don't ask me,
she said.
It's never happened. It is impossible.
Now all three of them turned to look at the border again.
Is it just me, said Kirsty, or is it just a little bit bigger?
There was some silence.
Still, said Johnny, what's the worst that can happen to us?
Then he wished he hadn't said that. He remembered thinking he'd hear the alarm clock waking him up that very first time, and then he recalled the shock of realizing that he wasn't being allowed to wake up at all.
You know, I don't want to find out, he added.
Without engines, we cannot turn the ship around, said the captain. I am sorry. You were too keen to save us.
It is getting bigger, said Kirsty. You can tell if you watch the stars behind it.
I am sorry, said the captain again.
At least the scree we should make it, said Johnny.
I am sorry.
Kirsty stood up.
Well, I'm not, she said. Come on.
She picked up the gun and strode away into the shadows. Johnny ran after her.
Where do you think you're going?
To the escape capsule, she said.
What escape capsule?
Indeed, said the captain, scuttling after them. I ask that too. There is no such thing.
There can be if we want there to be, said Kirsty, opening the door. You said the game is made up of things we know. Well, I know it'll be right down under the ship. But it's my dream as well as yours, right? Believe me, there'll be an escape capsule.
Her eyes had that gleam again. She hefted the gun.
I know it, she said. I've been there.
He remembered her room. He could picture her sitting there with a dozen sharp pencils and no friends, getting top marks in her history homework, while in her head she was chasing aliens.
I cannot understand, said the captain.
The corridor outside was full of steam. The ship might cross the border, but it was going to have a lot of repairs before it ever came back.
Said Johnny, it's a bit like the models in the cereal packets. It's kind of a human idea.
The scree-wee hesitated in the doorway. Then she turned to look at the screen.
We are getting closer, she said. If you think there is something there, then you must go now.
Come on, said Kirsty.
Johnny began.
Thank you,
said the captain gravely.
I haven't really done much, said Johnny.
Who knows? You never thought of yourself. You tried to work things out. You made choices. And I chose well.
And now we must go, said Kirsty.
Perhaps we shall meet again afterwards, if all goes well, said the captain.
She took one of Johnny's hands in two of her own.
Goodbye, she said.
Kirsty caught Johnny's shoulder and dragged him away.
Nice to have met you, she said to the alien. Sort of interesting. Come on, you.
Some of the lights had gone out. The corridors were full of steam and vague shapes. Kirsty ran on ahead, darting from shadow to shadow.
We'll have to go down, she said over her shoulder. It'll be there, don't worry.
You're really into this, aren't you? Said Johnny. Here's a ramp. Come on. We can't have much time.
There was another passage below that, and another ramp, curling away down through the steam. They came out in a room bigger than the bridge. There was a very large double door at one end and banks of equipment around the walls. And in the middle, standing on three landing legs, was a small ship. It had a stubby, heavy look.
There! See? What did I tell you?
Said Kirsty triumphantly. Johnny walked over to the nearest equipment panel and touched it. It was sticky. He looked at his fingertips. "It hasn't been here long," he said. "The paint's not dry." A screen in the middle of the panel lit up, showing the captain's face.
"How interesting," she said. "I look down at my controls and discover a new one. You have found your escape capsule?"
"It looks like it," said Johnny.
"We have 10 minutes until we reach the border," said the captain. "You should have plenty of time."
There was a whirring noise behind Johnny. The escape capsule's ramp was coming down.
"I found a switch on the landing leg," said Kirsty.
He joined her. The ramp was a silvery grey colour. It gleamed in the misty blue light that streamed down from inside the capsule.
"Can you guess what I'm thinking?" said Kirsty.
"You're thinking we haven't seen the gunnery officer lately," said Johnny.
"You're thinking he'll be in there somewhere, hiding, because this part is your dream, and that's how your dream works."
"Only I'll be ready for him," said Sigourney.
"Come on."
She sidled up the ramp, turning constantly in a series of small excited hops to keep the gun pointed at any teeth that might suddenly appear. There were two seats in the capsule in front of a very small control panel. There was a big window. There were a couple of small cupboards, and there wasn't much of anything else. Kirsty pointed to a cupboard and made a gesture to Johnny to open it. She raised her gun. He opened the door and stood back quickly. Kirsty seriously menaced a stack of tins. She caught Johnny's expression.
"Well, he could have been in there," she said.
"Oh, yes, sure. Admittedly, he'd have to stop to cut his arms and legs off and then curl up really small, but he could have been in there."
"Ha! Smart comment. Why not try looking under the seat cushions? It's amazing what goes down behind them."
Kirsty tried to prod behind the control panel without Johnny noticing. He noticed.
"Maybe aliens don't watch the same kind of films we watch," he said.
All right, no need to go on about it," she snarled. She looked at the controls and pressed a switch. The hatch swung up. The captain's face appeared on a small screen in the middle of the panel.
8 minutes to the border," she said.
"Right," said Kirsty.
She shoved a hand down behind her seat cushion and then looked at Johnny's grin.
"You see aliens everywhere, don't you?" he said.
"What's that supposed to mean?"
"Nothing, nothing. Just a thought."
She glowered at him. There were seat belts. They put them on. Kirsty started to drum her fingers on the panel. She seemed to be looking for something.
"How do we open the doors?" said Johnny.
"All right, all right. It's got to be here somewhere." She pressed a button. Behind them, the ramp rose up and hissed into place. Johnny looked around. There really was nowhere for anyone to hide. They were aboard the escape craft. They were safe. He didn't feel safe. He grabbed Kirsty's arm.
"Wait a minute," he said urgently. "I think something's wrong."
The screen flickered into life. There was a scree-wee there. It was the gunnery officer.
"Run and hide, human scum," he said.
They could see the screen behind him. He was on the bridge.
"You? Where is the captain?"
said Johnny.
"She will be dealt with while you run away."
"No!"
Kirsty nudged him.
"Look, the scree-wee are safe," she said. "The border is only a few minutes away. We've done it all. You can't chase around after her now. She'll have to take her chances. That's what she'd say if you asked her."
"But I can't ask her, can I?" He reached over and pushed a switch. There was a whirring behind them as the ramp slid down.
"I'm going back up there," he said.
"He'll be waiting for you."
"Fine."
He picked up the alien gun.
"Which bit's the trigger?"
She rolled her eyes.
"This is stupid."
"Scared, are you?"
said Johnny. His face was pale.
"Me?"
She shrugged and snatched the gun.
"I'll take this," she said. "I'm used to guns. You'll only make a mess of it."
Chapter 12. Just Like the Real Thing. They ran down the ramp and back to the corridor.
"Got a watch on?" said Johnny.
"Yes, we've got more than 6 minutes."
"I should have known," said Johnny as they ran. "No one gets that long to escape. James Bond never turns up with enough time to have a cup of coffee and clean his shoes before he disarms the time bomb. We're playing games again."
"Calm down.
If we find a cat, I'm going to kick it."
The corridors were darker. Water dripped from the ceiling. There was still some steam hissing out of broken pipes. They reached a junction.
Which way?
Kirsty pointed.
That way. Are you sure? Of course.
They disappeared into the gloom. About 30 seconds later, they reappeared, running.
Oh, yes. Of course. Well, they all look the same, actually. It must be this way.
This one did lead to the wide corridor with the door to the bridge at the far end. It was open. They could see the blue and white flickering of the big screen. Kirsty changed her grip on the gun.
Okay, she said. No messing about this time, right? No talking.
All right. Let's go.
How? You walk in there. When he leaps out at you, I'll get him.
Oh, I'm bait, am I? Kirsty glanced at her wrist.
You've got 4.5 minutes to think of something better, she said. Oh, sorry, 4 minutes and 25 seconds. Hang on, that's 20 seconds now. I just hope you're good.
Kirsty patted the gun.
Regional champion, remember? Trust me.
Johnny walked towards the open doorway. He tried to swivel his eyes both ways as he reached it.
4 minutes and 15 seconds,
said her voice far, far behind him. He halted on the threshold.
How come you weren't national champion?
He said.
I had food poisoning on the day, actually.
Oh, right. He stepped through. Multitooth death failed to happen to him. He risked a better look to either side, and then swallowing upwards as well.
Nothing here, he said. Okay, I'm right behind you.
On the screen, the border was already much bigger. We're travelling very fast, he thought, and it's still more than 4 minutes away, and already it's filling the sky. Huge isn't the word for it.
I can see all round the room, he said. No one's here. There was a control panel, wasn't there?
Said Kirsty.
Hang on, I'm in the doorway now. Yes, it's got to be behind the controls. Go ahead, I'm ready if it leaps out.
I'm not, he thought. He sidled across the floor until he could just see behind the bank of instruments.
There's no... Hold it. What?
I think it's the captain.
Is it alive? She. She's a she. You know she's a she. I can't tell. She's just lying there. I'll have a look. What good would that do? I'm going to have a look, all right? Careful, then. Stay where I can keep an eye on you.
He moved forward, searching the shadows around the edge of the huge room. It was the captain, and she was alive. At least, bits of what was probably her chest were going up and down. He knelt beside her.
Captain?
He whispered. She opened one eye.
Chosen one?
What happened?
He was waiting. While I talked to you, he crept in. Hit me.
Where'd he go then?
You must go. Not much time left. The fleet is...
You're hurt. I'll get Sigourney over here. Her claw gripped his arm.
Listen to me. He's going to blow up the ship. The fuel. The power plant. He's...
Johnny stood up.
Is she all right?
Kirsty called out.
I don't know.
She was standing in the doorway, outlined against the light. There was a shadow behind her. As Johnny watched, it spread its arms. It was bigger than a scree-wee should be now. It wasn't a funny alligator. There was still a suggestion of alligator there, but now there was insect too, and other things, things that had never existed outside of dreams.
Johnny shouted, "He's behind you!"
Then he lowered his head and ran. Kirsty turned. You can't trust dreams. If you live inside them, they'll turn on you, carry you along. He saw Kirsty turn and look up and up at the gunnery officer. The scree-wee opened his mouth. There were more teeth than he'd had before, rows and rows of them, and every one glistening and sharp. Her dream, Johnny thought. No wonder she always fights.
Shoot it! Shoot it!
She was just staring. She didn't seem to want to move.
You've got the gun!
He screamed. She was like a statue.
Shoot it!
Oh. Kirsty shook her head vaguely, and then, as if she'd suddenly